we tell stories that engage, inspire, and have a lasting impact? How do we turn thoughts and ideas into effective and authentic storytelling? How can we use stories to make a difference in our work, lives, and communities? I'm your host, Camille DePutter, and together we'll explore what it means to tell stories with heart. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Storytelling with Heart podcast. I am your host, Camille DePutter, and with me today is Molly Galbraith. Molly Galbraith is the co-founder of Girls Gone Strong, aka GGS, the world's largest platform providing evidence-based health, fitness, nutrition, pregnancy, and menopause education for women and the health and fitness professionals who work with them, including industry-leading certification programs and coaching. Through her GGS Academy, Molly has certified thousands of professionals in over 125 countries, helping them become the go-to coach for women in their gyms and communities. She's also the author of Strong Women Lift Each Other Up, a book dedicated to helping women create a better life for themselves and a better world for women and girls through lifting women up. I have been working with Molly and GGS for a number of years. I've worked on all of their current certifications, including their newly released Menopause Coaching Specialist Certification. And I served as Molly's storytelling partner in her book, Strong Women Lift Each Other Up. I'm so excited to have Molly here to give listeners a behind-the-scenes look at what it really takes to make a name for yourself as a thought leader, to become a published author of nonfiction, to create courses and certifications, and to build a business around your passion and your values. Like, what does that process and journey really look like? So, Molly, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Cam, thank you so much for inviting me to be on this podcast. You have been such a huge part of a lot of the creation of the things that we were talking about. And it's a joy to be able to join you on here. And like you said, give people kind of a sneak peek of behind the scenes of how we've done it and why we've done it and all of those things.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, Molly. Like, truly, you have created a lot of content and a lot of ways for people to learn and to grow, whether it's through being coached directly or through reading the book or through getting certified. And you've really made a name for yourself in the health and fitness space and, you know, being known for helping women live more empowered, stronger, healthier lives, you know, and helping coaches do better. And so I thought we could begin, I mean, maybe not at the very, very beginning, but like, How did you get here? Like, where did all of this start for you? The idea of serving women and helping them become stronger and more empowered, like that, where did that seed begin?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. And before I answer, I want to be really clear that I am a big part of the front-facing part of Girls Gone Strong, but like, I am certainly not even close to doing this stuff alone. You know, we have a huge GGS team. I get so much of the credit, and truly there's blood, sweat, and tears from dozens and dozens of women and a handful of men who are behind the scenes making it all work, right? So I'm out in the front and people are saying, oh, you've done this thing and it's so great, but it truly is a collaboration and collective effort of so many brilliant people. And so while it started, you know, with me behind my laptop many years ago, kind of turning stuff out, it's kind of like the iceberg thing, right? Like, I might be like peeking out of the water and people can see, you know, my face, but I do want to be clear that it is a massive collaboration. We, you know, I did not write a 503-page textbook with 1,000 references on, you know, coaching women during and after menopause by myself, not even close. So I want to give a huge hat tip and nod to all of the incredible people who aren't just creating the certifications or the curriculum or the courses or the books or whatever themselves, but the folks who are, you know, in our client care team, who are connecting people with those resources, who are answering questions, who are facilitating our community, who are, you know, making our materials look beautiful and easy to consume and deepening people's understanding of it with design and all of that. So we have this really, mm-hmm. and the people fulfilling it in the warehouse, you know, there's just this massive team effort going on to take stuff from ideation to creation all the way through fulfillment and getting things in people's hands. So I right. do want to say that.
And thank you for that. I appreciate it as obviously one of those behind the scenes people. And it's, you know, it's a bit, can feel a bit self-serving for me to talk about, because obviously I want people to know that people like me exist, you know, from my one role. As you said, there's so many different roles that go into creating something like this and bringing it to life. But from my role as a communication specialist who wears hats of editing and writing and coaching and consulting on projects like these, I want people to know that this idea of that kind of solo author is really kind of a myth, especially when we look at the magnitude of content that people are creating today, that it's not just one book, which doesn't happen in isolation, but, you know, even when you see stuff coming out on social media or speeches that people produce and, you know, all this great stuff, that it's not happening alone. And partly I want people to know that so that they'll hire me. But partly I want people to know that even if they never, you know, even if it's not me or it's, you know, they're working with peers, with friends, with, you know, collaborators of other kinds, like I want them to know we don't do this work alone, and that that idea, like, well, I couldn't possibly do it because how could I, one person, do all this? Everybody else must be better than me. Or more efficient or whatever. It's like, no, it's not. There's a whole team and a kind of collaborative process that is likely going on behind the scenes that may be available to you as well in some form. So anyway, thank you for bringing that up. And then we may come back to that as well, depending on where this conversation goes, because I had flagged, you know, this idea of collaboration as something to chat more about. But with that said, let's go back to the beginning again.
Yes. My super fun ADHD brain. You never know what's going to come out of my mouth or where it's going to take us. So yeah. So beginning for me, it was interesting. When I think back to kind of my history, I think of myself as like a really sedentary person up until I was about 19, when I got into health and fitness and it changed my life and really, I started to feel strong and more confident and empowered in my body. I've been through several iterations of what strong, confident, and empowered kind of means as I've matured. But when I look all the way back, my mom used to take me to the gym with her as like a tiny baby. She decided I was the third child and she wanted to, quote unquote, get back in shape. And she became an aerobics instructor. And I always tell the funny story. She used to teach 2 90-minute aerobics classes back to back with a 10-minute smoke break in between, which is the most 80s thing in fitness ever. And I actually used to ask her to buy me workout tapes and things like that. So while I think of, like, I had this period in my teens and, you know, I didn't always have the best eating habits and skills growing up. But I always did have kind of like a seed planted or a love as it relates to exercise. I would wear unitards. I would make my friends do workout videos with me and stuff. So I went through a period of being really sedentary at like end of high school, beginning of college. And then yeah, started working out when I was 19 and fell in love with it and very quickly started competing in things like powerlifting and figure and started helping other people with their health and fitness. I got my start on internet forums back in 2004, sharing kind of my health and fitness journey before Facebook was even a thing, and folks reached out and started asking me to help them. And so I started giving nutrition and training advice far before I was capable or probably should, but I was really clear with people like, hey, I'm not really trained in this, but I can share with you what's worked for me. And I started to see how health and fitness had the opportunity to really change people's lives. And in the beginning for me, it was all about aesthetics, right? I was so focused on what my body looked like. And to me, that was what gave me confidence, was like, oh, my body looks really good. And I'm getting all of this compliments from people. And this is, this is the path, right? This is the thing that's going to make me feel really good. And I had struggled with self-esteem for many years. And so it was like, okay, I found the thing. If I can change my body to look this one particular way, I can get all of this positive affirmation from people. And this is how I'm going to feel good about myself and in my body. And as we know, people go through things in their lives and, you know, bodies change and, you know, we go through illness or injury or pregnancy or menopause or whatever the thing is, we go through these different life stages. And as my body fluctuated, so did people's responses to my body. And that was really a hard hitting thing on my confidence. And so it was about, gosh, maybe 5 or 6 years into my fitness journey when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's and PCOS, I ended up injuring my back and experiencing a back injury. So my weight was kind of fluctuating. And at that point I was like, well, okay, if I can't be the really lean girl, I'm going to be the really strong girl. And so I decided to start pursuing strength as my kind of place to find validation, right? Well, if I can't be as lean as I want to be, then I'm going to be really strong. And I kept going through these different life circumstances. And it felt like every time I went through one, it expanded kind of my definition or my perspective of what it means to be strong, confident, and empowered, what it means to improve my health and fitness, what it means to really feel good in my body and feel, yeah, happy with myself. And so as I was kind of going through all these different iterations, I was bringing other people along with me. So I was training clients online and in person. In 2010, I co-founded a brick and mortar gym in Lexington, Kentucky with a former business partner. His business model had actually always been focused on helping women get strong. The early in my career, I was just helping anybody, men, women, whoever, like anybody that came to me, I would serve them. But his big focus was on helping women get strong. And so that's the majority of the people who came to our gym were women who wanted to get stronger. And I started recognizing what an incredible gift it was to help women start to see what they were capable of and to start to feel empowered and to start to see, like, if I make these changes in the gym, then this happens, right? You can actually see this, like, physical and emotional and mental transformation. Like, if I do this, then I can get stronger in this way. I can become more capable in this way. I can become more independent this way. So women would, you know, come into the gym and they'd be like, I changed the water jug at work for the first time with no help. Or I was able to put my golden retriever in the car. Or my granddaughter ran up to me and I picked her up and I had no pain. And to watch the elation on their face when they started to realize what they were capable of was just an enormous game changer for me in terms of recognizing, like, oh, this is the thing I want to do. I want to help women get as strong and empowered in their lives and bodies as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then how did you go from having that experience of seeing these women who you were helping change and transform? How did that translate to your own internal change? Because it sounds like you had used, you know, maybe how much you could lift and in the past how you looked as that kind of sense of validation. So what was your own journey within your own sense of inner sense of strength and empowerment and self-validation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had certainly relied on that external validation for a really long time to feel good about myself. And like I said, it kind of went from, you know, what my body looked like to what my body could do. And eventually it was around 2013. I had been through some really significant life changes. My dad passed away unexpectedly. I injured myself in the gym and started having chronic back pain. And I started realizing, like, oh, okay, all of this stuff is fleeting, right? All of this stuff can be taken away from me, the way that my body looks, even what my body can do. You know, that's a really popular kind of piece of advice or recommendation for women lifting. It's like, oh, don't focus on what your body looks like, just focus on what it can do. But the thing is when we put all of our eggs in that basket, right, mm-hmm. that can be taken away too with injury or illness or, you know, normal aging processes, things like that. And so, or even just having to take some time off from the gym because life happens, right? And so I started recognizing, like, okay, I want to like myself and I want to feel good about myself for who I am as a person and the gifts that I have and the things, positive things that I bring to the world, not just what my body looks like and what my body can do. That's cool, right? I think it's awesome mm-hmm. that when I flex, I have, you know, arm muscles or whatever. I think it's cool that I can, you know, deadlift double my body weight and do pull-ups and all of these kinds of things. But I decided that that wasn't going to be the sole kind of source of my self-esteem and worth, and that instead I was going to be a lot more intentional about liking myself for who I am as a person and the good things that I do in the world versus just what my body looks like or even what it could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so you had mentioned or made reference to like early blogging. And I know there was one blog post in particular that when you first started out that you just kind of wrote, posted, and then went viral. Can you tell me that story?
Yes. Okay. But I have a question. So there was the Heart Out Here for a Fit Chick blog post.
Yeah, and that's the one.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, and then there was the mega viral. Yeah.
I mean, we can tell both now that we've mentioned that. But yeah, what I'm trying to get at is like, take me back to this moment before all of the following stuff that happened with, you know, making a name for yourself and GGS and just like the early experience of trying to write and maybe finally getting like a little bit vulnerable and just putting that stuff on the internet and what that experience was like.
Yeah. When I look back, like I can't remember other health and fitness professionals sharing, you know, photos of their cellulite and struggles of their body image. I remember I was at a conference one time and there were these two guys there who were both in health and fitness and we were eating ice cream. And I was like, let's get a picture of us eating ice cream or whatever. And I was like, I'm going to share it online. Cause at the time it felt quote unquote ironic that fitness professionals would be eating ice cream, right? They refused. They would not let me post a photo of them. This is like 2011 or 12. They would not let me post a photo of them eating ice cream on Facebook, which is just bananas now looking back. But that's how much things have changed in the last 11, 12 years, which is great. But yeah, so I've been going through these kind of body fluctuations and I wrote a blog called It's Hard Out Here for a Fit Chick. And you know, looking back 10, 11 years later, there were some, can be a little cringy in some ways, right? There's like massive, like, you know, privileges and things that I wasn't acknowledging and just things that I didn't have language for, that would acknowledge other people's experiences, you know, as they relate.
It's not what you would write today.
Yeah. I'll say that. It's not what I would write today, but it was about the pressure that health and fitness professionals and particularly women were under, the scrutiny that we were under, the microscope that we were under to be perfect, to have these perfect bodies, to look like the fitness magazine covers 24/7, and the backlash that we would face if we didn't. I was getting negative commentary from people on like my YouTube channel, folks on Facebook were saying negative things. I was getting comments from people in my community and even had a colleague of mine make fun of my body to my gym staff when we had invited him to come speak at a conference. And so it was called It's Hard Out Here for a Fit Chick. And I just shared just the struggles that I was going through. And like you said, I was choosing to be really vulnerable about what I was experiencing. And I was so nervous posting that blog. I literally hit publish and just like slammed my laptop shut and went for a walk and was like, I'm not going to look, not going to look, not going to look, not going to look. And I think that it had like 50 or 60,000 views within the first couple of days. And just was really one of the first kind of viral-ish things that I had written that seemed to really resonate with people. And it was really cool. You know, I got some negative commentary, of course, but it was a really beautiful thing to say like, hey, world, I'm struggling with this. And maybe you're struggling with this too. And to have people say, yes, yes, in fact, I am. And thank you for giving language to my struggle and helping me understand that I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to bring up that story because I think, I mean, clearly the landscape has changed now. You know, we live in an era of so much content, you know, blogs, social media, you know, it would be very unusual for somebody to just post something on a blog and get that kind of response overnight, or within, you know, the span of going for a walk. But I think the experience that you describe still is relatable in that you had to do something that felt, the experience of it felt very vulnerable to you. And you still had to kind of, you know, like I can just feel you like going for a walk and being like, oh, it's so cringy. I'm so afraid to look. I can't believe I just did that. What are people going to think? Carrying all of that. And that it, you know, because that's the kind of vulnerability that it takes to put yourself out there. But if you hadn't, then I don't know, would any of this have ever happened?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of joke about my willingness to be vulnerable online because it started in 2008. I was in a long-term relationship and with my then partner at the time, I started going to therapy because I struggled to be vulnerable in my relationship. So my joke is that therapy worked too well because now I'm vulnerable on the internet. and so 15 years into therapy, best thing I've ever done for myself. But I just started realizing the power of what it was like to be able to let other people know they're not alone in their struggles. And it felt at that point, once I did it, and you know, you kind of rip Band-Aid off, right? And so you're like, okay, I did it. I didn't die. So that's good. It seemed like people, it seemed like people benefited from this thing. Like maybe there's something else that I could share that would resonate with people. And so I do think that that one particular blog post, it was like 2012 or 2013, and it ended up being a catalyst for me to feel, I don't know if you ever get like 100% okay with sharing really vulnerable stuff. At some point, if you're 100% comfortable, it's probably not vulnerable for you anymore, right? But I think that doing that post and realizing the power that it had gave me the courage to continue to do that over and over again with different topics in my life, whether it was talking about, you know, my cellulite and my stretch marks, or you know, actually liking my body and not wanting to change it, or talking about grief and loss, or talking about, you know, my struggles with PCOS and Hashimoto's and ADHD and things like that. So it really did. It was certainly a catalyst for me, and it's hard to know what would have happened had I not, you know, published that thing, but it was definitely a jumping off point and lit a fire for me to want to continue to kind of push myself to share those sorts of things if they could help other people.
Yeah. And I really want to highlight that because it's, first of all, both the part about the vulnerability, because we can't skip over that. And it's true that in time, you know, we become more comfortable often with those topics that feel really, you know, dicey to talk about at first. And the climate and the culture in which we're speaking matters as well, because to your point now, it's much more common for people to be open about these kinds of things or to have conversations about body image and things of that nature. But at that time and in that space and culture, it really wasn't done. But the other thing too that this highlights for me is just that, you know, you often just have to kind of take a step in the direction of the area you want to go in, the things that you care about, the things that you want to share. It's not like you were sitting there 10 plus years ago with a fully formed vision of here's the leader I want to be, here's the change I want to make in the world, here's the business I want to run, right? It was kind of one piece at a time.
100%. And you know, it's, there's some analogy and I might butcher it a little bit, but it's like, you can only see what's coming at you through the windshield and everyone else can see it like in the rearview mirror after it's happened. Right. And so it can look like when you look at someone's career, you look at their trajectory, it's really easy to be like, think that they had everything planned out and knew every calculated step and that it was a really clear path to get from where they were to where they are now. But it's not at all like that. Like you said, it's literally one decision, one step, one choice that is kind of a vote in favor of who you want to be, how you want to show up in the world. I think about it a little bit like, and just attempted to summit a 14er with my partner and some of our friends for his 40th birthday. And, you know, they say that they'll have like mile markers along the trail, right? That tells you how many miles you've gone. But the distance on your, like your Apple Watch or your All Trails app or whatever is always a lot longer than that mile marker because you don't walk in a straight line, right? Mm-hmm. Your you're going kind of to the left and the right. You're trying to avoid obstacles. You maybe go a little bit in the wrong direction. It's amazing when people give me directions and they're like, you can't miss it. And I'm like, you'd be surprised, actually. I could totally miss it and go in the wrong direction. But it's always a lot longer of a path than the mile markers tell you that it is, because you're not walking in a straight line. And I think the journey to leadership, the journey in business ownership, the journey in just being a person who makes a difference in the world, it's never a straight line, right? You're always having to kind of zigzag and course correct and go around obstacles and take a minute to take a break. And so, yeah, it's definitely just that one foot in front of the other, one action in that direction, and then pausing to reflect and say, like, am I going in the right direction? Am I going to the place that I want to be? And you can't really know until you keep taking those steps forward.
Yeah, I love that analogy. It's so good and so true. Can you speak a little bit to just then what that was like also in business? Like, we don't have time to tell the full linear journey, but I know that, you know, coming to this point of having all of these certifications at GGS, and, you know, somewhere between this being a passion, a movement, to being a business that offers all this education and training through GGS Academy, can you just speak a little bit to what that was like?
Yeah. Yeah. So GGS started in 2011. For folks who don't know, it literally started as a kind of passion project, movement, Facebook page of women wanting to celebrate women in strength. And at the time, I had my brick and mortar gym. I had a seminar business that I was running where we were educating coaches and trainers on how to coach women. I had a software business that ended up being a failed, you know, software health and fitness business. I was just trying out my hand at all of these different things because I was so wildly passionate about making a difference in health and fitness. And in the first couple of years of GGS, it really was just that. It was a movement. It was a community. It was a celebration of women in strength. We released our first program to the world, our first paid program to the world in 2014. And it was a 16-week strength training program for women. And at that point, so I'd been a coach and trainer for about 10 years. And a mutual friend of ours, Dr. John Berardi, reached out to me and said, hey, you did it. I love this program. I want my wife to do it when she gives birth to our third child. And I was like, whoa, you're Dr. John Berardi. I want your wife to do this program now. Like, what can I do to get this in your wife's hands and to, like, you know, kind of facilitate this relationship and help her? And so I started doing a little bit of research about what would it take to modify this program. Like, at that point, the only three things I'd ever heard about coaching pregnant and postpartum women were, don't let their heart rate get over 140, don't let them overheat, and don't let them lie on their back, you know, past 16 weeks or whatever, which two of the three of those aren't even necessarily accurate, right? But I started researching it and my mind was absolutely blown, Cam, at all of the stuff that I didn't know about coaching pre and postnatal women. And I started thinking, I was like, I've been a coach for 10 years. The majority of my mentors have been men, and love my mentors, so grateful to them. And also, I hadn't learned anything about this topic. And it was this kind of watershed light bulb sliding door moment where I started realizing how wildly pre and postnatal women were underserved in health and fitness. Like, how could I have been a coach for 10 years, relentlessly learning everything I could about coaching and coaching women, and this wasn't even something on most people's radar, right? I had coached tons of pregnant and postpartum women and did not have the knowledge and skills that I needed to do it safely and effectively. And I didn't even know that. And mm-hmm. I was someone who wanted that. And just thing after thing started happening in my life. You know, I would have people, you know, my Hashimoto's and PCOS would flare up and there would be very little information about that. I'd be working with someone who had pelvic floor dysfunction, have very little information about that. I had clients who were steeped in diet culture and had disordered eating and body image struggles. And I had no skills how to help them. And I started realizing, like, holy cow, there is this whole world of understanding the anatomical, physiological, and psychological considerations when it comes to serving women really well that no one's talking about and no one's providing information about. And I got really frustrated and started realizing like, okay, well, if people aren't talking about this, like we are going to do it. We're going to talk about it. And so it was around 2016 that my partner Casey and I had a kind of big discussion. We took a moment. People always talk about working in the business versus working on the business, you know, so like you're kind of on the hamster wheel, doing the day to day, keeping your head above water. Like, do you ever take time to step back and say, okay, where is this organization going? What are we doing? How are we helping people? Like, what do we want to be in the world? And so we had a long car ride and we started talking about it. We're like, what do we do better than anybody? We're like, we coach and train women. That's what we do. And we started realizing how many health and fitness professionals have been attracted to our community like a magnet, because we were one of the only legitimate resources talking about women and strength. And so we realized, and a bunch of women who had joined our community in 2011, who had had their lives changed by health and fitness, decided that they then wanted to be that person that GGS was for them. And so they often became coaches and trainers or were considering it. And so we realized like, okay, this is a really big opportunity to create an academy that houses comprehensive, evidence-based, interdisciplinary certifications to coach women. And the reason that that's important is because, you know, there are, especially in the last 5 years, 6 years, there has been more education created about coaching women. And it's fantastic that more people are wanting to share their knowledge and offer this. And there's a lot of great things out there. And I wanted to create, or we wanted to create a place, kind of a one-stop shop where you could get the comprehensive nature. So it's not just exercise. It's not just nutrition. It's anatomy and physiology. It's coaching and psychology. It's mental health and well-being. It's nutrition. It's exercise. It's rest. It's recovery. It's programming. It's the medical considerations that can impact women. We wanted it to be evidence-based, which to us is not just rooted in the best research, but also in the practical and clinical experience of these amazing world-class experts who have been working with women for a combined hundreds of years, right? Like, I love having conversations with some of our curriculum contributors, like Dr. Krista Scott Dixon and Dr. Helen Coleus, because they're able to say like, this is what the research says, but that doesn't make any damn sense in real life, you know? Or like, hey, here's how you take this little bit of research that we've gotten and tweak what we're doing to apply it to people in the context of their real lives. So, and then it's interdisciplinary. So we brought together all the experts. We brought together the PhDs in exercise science and molecular biology and a behavior change and psychology. We brought together the registered dietitians, the medical doctors, the OBGYNs, the nurses, the midwives, the doulas, the, you know, strength and conditioning coaches and pelvic health physical therapists, and put them all essentially in a virtual room together, right? And had them duke it out to say like, that's not what I'm seeing in my clinic. Well, this is what the research says. Well, when I've tried that with these people, here's what we're seeing. And how do we give people that critical context and nuance that is so valuable for coaching real human beings in the context of their real lives? And so we created this academy. It started with our pre and postnatal coaching certification. We followed it up quickly with our women's coaching specialist certification, which covers coaching adult women across their lifespan. And we're so excited to kind of, you know, hit the other part of women's lives that is so critical and dive deep into that perimenopausal, menopausal, and postmenopausal period, which our women's coaching specialist certification does talk about that a bit. But that was, again, kind of like another pre and postnatal moment for me, like mind blown, right? Where I realized like, oh, we just wrote a 500-page textbook and had to cut so much, right? Uh-huh. Because there's so much to know about coaching peri and postmenopausal women really well. And so to be able to create something that's a deep dive into a topic that just impacts women, to learn that women can start going through perimenopause at age 39. For some of them, it happens even earlier, right? For women who are in early menopause or surgical menopause, but it is not uncommon for perimenopausal symptoms to start at 39 for women. On average, it impacts their life. Symptoms impact their lives in perimenopause for 4 to 8 years. Then they go through actually menopause itself. Then postmenopausal symptoms can impact women for 10 years or more, right? So when you look at how long it can impact a woman, these symptoms can impact her life for up to 20 years. And 73% of women report never seeking any help for their symptoms. And I was talking to my partner, Casey, the other day, and he's like asking me questions about menopausal symptoms. And I'm like, we can literally start at the head and go all the way down to the feet. Like, start at the head and you're like, okay, brain fog, difficulty concentrating, anxiety, depression, move down to the neck. It's like muscle tension, but, you know, move down to the breast. It's breast tenderness and pain. You go to the heart, increased risk of cardiovascular disease. You know, you go down to the belly and it's like increased, you know, visceral fat storage. And for some women, weight gain, particularly around their midsection. And we've got bone health and brain health and muscle health and pelvic health. And it's like, literally it can impact all of these things. And for so many women, they feel out of sorts in their body. They feel frustrated. They feel confused. They feel like it's never going to end. And they feel like there's nothing that can be done. And in writing this textbook, it is just incredible to see how much health and fitness professionals can do within their scope of practice as a coach or trainer that could have a massive positive impact on women's symptoms and their quality of life. And I don't know, making them feel validated and heard about what they're actually going through, right? And we can just be these incredible guides for women during this huge transition in their life. And so it's just very, very exciting to have worked with such an awesome team to create a resource that I think is going to be game-changing for professionals and for the women who work with them.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I feel the same way. I have loved working on all of these certifications, and the most recent one, the menopause certification has just been amazing, because I also got to learn so much through the development of this product myself. And even though you just listed off a whole bunch of, you know, like symptoms and difficulties with it, there's also all of the different ways that we can support ourselves and each other. And there's, you know, the real kind of more like hopeful side of it as well. Like when we are empowered with knowledge and possibility and new ways of looking at things as well, then, you know, all kinds of new options open up. But I just really want to underscore a couple of things. The point that you made about wanting to make a thing, first of all, born out of your desire to help and seeing a gap in the marketplace. So you had this thing that you know, like, I want to help this population, and yet they're underserved. There's not enough information out there. Well, okay, I want to be the change, so to speak. I want to lead that. But then realizing that doesn't mean you had to do it all yourself. I'm saying, okay, one of the ways that I can lead here is by bringing together, being the facilitator, being the conduit in a way to bring together other people who have this deep knowledge and have this expertise, and then help, you know, bring their knowledge together and elevate their knowledge and so on, and then present it in a way that other people can actually learn it and use it. Because I think sometimes when we think about this idea of leadership or making change or being a thought leader, or whatever it means, or we think, well, I have to have all the answers, and we maybe see our own limitations. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have all the answers. And sometimes leadership means bringing together other people who are leading or have the potential to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to say that it was a really beautifully laid out, elegant plan that I had from the very beginning, but it was part that, right? And then also part like, holy shit, there's no way I could do this on my own. I need help. So yeah. I would say, you know, it's really easy to like give myself a lot of credit and say like, oh yes, it was so important to me. It was. I was very clear. So GGS actually started with 7 women, and over time, the other 6 women stepped away, and some of them have come back and been involved in different ways. Our head coach, our head of GGS coaching, Jen Comas, who is a dear friend and co-founder, I want to give her a shout out. She's incredible and is a huge part of GGS and works on our curriculum and all of that. But when I was suddenly kind of alone with GGS, I was like, oh, there is only so much that I know about this. And so I realized the value of like, if I really want to help people, I have to bring in other experts. And and highlight their knowledge and use their help to educate. So it was in part recognizing like where I'm strong and where I'm less strong. I am a generalist, so I have a good amount of information about exercise and nutrition and, you know, pelvic health and pre and postnatal and coaching menopausal women and behavior change and body image and disordered eating and diet culture, right? I've got a great amount of information about all those things. I am not the number one world's, you know, top specialist in pelvic health. I am not the world's number one top, you know, in these particular topics. And so I wanted to bring together the people who were. So it was a combination, like you said, of kind of recognizing like, hey, I don't have the skills and knowledge to do this alone. And also, holy crap, I need some help. We're trying to write a 500-page textbook. Where are the awesome women who are going to come together and help with this particular thing? And every time I have collaborated with other women on awesome projects, everybody makes it better. Like, and that's the really beautiful part about it is you can talk about collaboration, but when you actually see what it's like to be better together, it's like you never want to go back to doing things by yourself, right? Like, and so it's so fun to be able to work on a project with somebody like you or someone like KSD or Kelsey or Helen or whatever. It's like I can work on something and I can pass it to you, and it is, you are guaranteed to make it better, right? And then you can work on something and you can pass it back to me, and I'm like guaranteed to be able to tweak it just a little bit more in my voice or add like one other little sentence or whatever. And so it's just such a beautiful process to go through and to be like, this is number one, I'm not doing this alone, right? Which always feels really good. But number two, to realize like how cool the stuff is that you can create when you bring together a diverse group of people with different skills, different backgrounds, different life experiences, different intersectional identities. You know, it's incredible what you can create in the world when you bring those people together to work towards a common goal.
Yeah, I agree. I think so many folks too, especially when it comes to writing, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to encourage people to take the time to write and express themselves. And there's so much fear. There's a fear that we all have to go through whenever we're creating something, you know, the fear of getting negative feedback or that it won't be good enough or something. And I think when you collaborate and work with others, it flips that script a little bit because you realize the point is to get better, that like you said, we are better together, knowing that through getting somebody else's feedback or edits or involvement or participation, that the end product is going to be better. And we're going to be better in the process because we're going to get to learn from each other, see something through someone else's eyes. We're going to be able to expand our own perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a much better and more confident writer for having worked with you, Cam. Like, I can't sing your praises enough. Like, there were so many times I'd be like, I don't want you to read this because it's bad, you know? And you would really be like, no, Molly, it's not bad. Like, I think we can flip the intro to this to like maybe hook the reader a little bit more, or I think we could put a bow on it a little bit better this way. But like, you have good ideas to share with the world, and you know, and you're good at expressing yourself. Like, it could just use a little tweaking or, you know, a little bit more work or whatever. So I am a much better and more confident and skilled writer because of working with you. So huge, huge, huge thank you to you for that. And also, it feels amazing when you're like, I can't look at this anymore. Somebody else, please take it. Because you're just so exhausted. And you're so, you know, writing is a, who was it that said writing is easy? You just sit at your typewriter and bleed or whatever. Was that Hemingway or something like that? It is a beautiful process, and it can also be a really painful one. And so to have a kind of partner in crime or someone in the writing trenches with you to just be like, I can't look at this thing anymore, or I'm totally stuck, I'm looking at the blinking cursor of death. Like, can you just put a couple bullet points down for me to expand on or whatever the thing is? It is such an amazing process to do with other people and the stuff that you can create. Clearly, you know, this beautiful library of things we've created at GGS as a team with, again, 20 something people. I mean, experts alone, there's two dozen. Then you have the developmental editors. Then you have the copy editors. Then you have the proofreaders. Then you have the indexers. Then you have the designers. Then you know, it is truly a team of people making this stuff happen.
Yeah, it's no joke. And obviously there is a scale there, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of different levels that people can put work out at. But when you're looking to make something that is a significant product for your business and that you really do want to be world class and have that level of value, a lot goes into it. I wanted to touch a bit more on that, the book writing process. Can you talk about why you wanted to write a book in the first place and why you were willing to dedicate? Because writing a book is a whole other ordeal of blood, sweat, and tears. And you and I went through that very closely together. What made you choose to write a book in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. It, you know, I have not been pregnant or given birth, but it's like one of those things where I've heard people who have done both. They're like, it's kind of like that in that, like, you work on this thing for so long, creating it and building it, and it's coming from inside of you. And then you birth it out into the world, and it's a really painful process. But then once it's out, you're like, yay, I forgot. Let's do it again. Right. So I will remember as much of the, process as I can, though I might've blocked a little bit of it out, but no, I was asked years ago to give the keynote speech at, an event in Australia, in Melbourne, Australia, the Women's Health and Fitness Summit. And it's this really beautiful kind of thing that happened where I had been a guest on a podcast. This woman named Marika Hart, who lives in Perth, reached out to me and heard me on the podcast and sent me a letter of encouragement saying, like, hell yes, I heard you on this podcast. I love what you do. She was a pre and postnatal expert. At the time, we desperately needed a pre and postnatal expert. So I hopped on a call with her. She joined the team. She introduced me to a woman named Mish Wright in Melbourne, Australia, to help answer some of my questions as they related to pre and postnatal women. Mish and I became friends. Mish invited me to speak at her event. And the speech that I gave at her event ended up becoming the book, Strong Women Lift Each Other Up. So it was this really beautiful kind of like full circle moment of like all the different ways we lifted each other up throughout the process became this book, Strong Women Lift Each Other Up. So Mish invited me to speak at her event. In 2018, at the time we had a closed Facebook group called GGS Strong Women Lift Each Other Up. And I had really, seen that phrase and fallen in love with that concept because it had felt like so much of what we were trying to do at GGS was be strong women inside and out who would lift each other up in different ways. And so I was like, yeah, I'll give the keynote speech. I was busy. I think we were creating the women's coaching special cert at the time, but I was like, yeah, Mish, I'll do it. I'll speak. And so she emails me. She's like, great. What's your topic going to be? And I was like, strong women lift each other up? ? And so she's like, that's great. That'll work perfect. And I'm like, crap. Now I have to write a talk on it. So reached out to you and we worked on, my speech for that event. And it was ended up being like a 27 page typed out speech that I literally only had time to like fully read. Obviously, you know, we worked on it together and helped write it and all this stuff, but I only had got to fully read it like start to finish in its totally finished form, like once or twice before I gave it. And my partner Casey was like, can you just get up there and like read from a page for 90 minutes? And I was like, we're about to find out. They were literally like calling my name up to the podium to talk. And I gave this speech and Casey said that when he was looking at the audience, like every woman was on the edge of her seat. Like no one had their phone out. No one was on social media. Like everyone was edge of their seat, like just full on body language, like coming, you know, staring at me while I was talking. And at the end, there was this like thunderous standing ovation. And I was like, the universe just gave me a hit. It was like, oh, that's not a speech. That's a book. And I was like, shit, I do not have time to write a book right now. We're trying to do so many other things within the organization. So this was the end of 2018. And once I knew it was a book, I could not get that idea out of my body. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't focus. I couldn't, I mean, like literally it was just living inside of me and it felt like it was like knocking on my insides, telling me that it had to get out of my body. And I never really had that experience before. Like I'd had ideas of things I wanted to create and things that I thought would be really cool to put into the world. I had never had a thing living inside of me that had to get out or it was going to like destroy me if it didn't. And so, yeah. And then I was like, well, I guess we're writing a book. And at that point we had self-published a couple things, but after some conversations with different folks, we decided that traditional publishing might be the way to go. And so, yeah, it was really just this idea that I felt like needed to live in the world. And if it didn't, it was going to like destroy me from the inside out. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah. I remember Marie Forleo, I think in referring once to her book, writing her book, that it was like, you know, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, like the thing I would, like the piece of work I really would not want to have left, you know, undone would be the book. And I thought about that with you, where it's like, and I felt that way with some of my own stuff too, where it's like, I have to make sure I get this done ASAP, just in case something happens. I got to make sure it's out into the world. And that book writing was an intensive process. We started it off. I came to your and Casey's place and stayed there for a few days to map out the outline and pull all the stories out for you. And we worked with your publisher, your editor over there to write and develop the book. You put so much into the book writing and then the marketing of the thing. And now it's been a couple years later, I think. I don't know. I have the pandemic time blindness, but the dust went and settled. How do you feel about it now?
Yeah, it was March 9th, 2021. So it's been a little over 2 years. And it is, for a long time, I said it was the work that I've done that I'm most proud of. And now we've got this menopause cert and I'm like, man, this thing is so, so good. I think that though, if I had to choose, you know, I mean, the book is just, it's so widely applicable to any woman, any human, really. I've had a lot of men read it and say it's made me a better father and partner and, you know, human in the world. But yeah, I'm still so proud of it. I feel like even in just 2 years, you know, I was gonna say it's aged well, it's only 2 years old, but I still feel so proud of what we created. I think I still get messages from people telling me how it's changed their lives, how it's changed the way that they, you know, their relationships with other people, their relationships with themselves, how they do work. I mean, one woman literally reached out and said it changed her entire business model of how she was going to run her company, in terms of using a more collaborative approach versus a more competitive approach, where she was kind of, you know, pitting people against each other in territories of, you know, coaching women or whatever. And so, yeah, it feels amazing that it's out in the world. It feels incredible that it's reached so many people. I've seen already kind of the ripple effect that we even talk about in the book of how it's created a lot of good in the world. And so, yeah, I'm just so, so happy I did it. It'll be interesting and exciting maybe to go back in a couple more years and say like, oh, is there a revised or expanded or updated, you know, version that I'd want to create, or a chapter that something that I've learned, because I found that in my work, you know, every few years I go through this kind of personal evolution that expands the work that I do or changes the work that I do. And so it'll be interesting to see if that holds true with this book in the next few years. But yeah, overall, wildly proud of it. So glad it exists in the world. And so, yeah, just so, so proud when people tell me they've read it and talk about how it's changed their lives.
That's so cool. Well, I myself was very, I mean, I feel proud of all of the work that we put out together. I felt so proud when that book came out, and very proud of it, and very proud of the menopause coaching specialist cert as well, because I think it's amazing. It's interesting that you put it that way too, because on my list of questions to ask you was actually, what are you most proud of? So you went ahead and answered that for me. Just before we wrap up, I guess a final question I have for you would be, I mean, you've mentioned before your values, you know, collaboration being one of them. I don't know, could you speak a bit about what it's like when you're running a business and you have all of these competing possibilities, projects, decisions, things you can do, and then you have yourself and your own, you know, values and desires to navigate it all. Like, how do you navigate that with your values forefront in your mind? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, totally. Because I have to go to it every single day when I'm making decisions in the organization. So if people have not taken the time to discover what their kind of personal and professional values are, I would highly recommend doing that. There's I walk you through that exercise in the book, Strong Women Lift Each Other Up. And, you know, your values are kind of the guardrails for what you think it means to live your life well. So there are things that are most important to you, the things that are just really a kind of litmus test for decision making in your personal and professional life. So I've gone through and done my values. My number one is making a difference. Number two is integrity. And number three is resilience. And so for me, I have found that when I am trying to make decisions in my life or in the world or in the business, for me personally, those are the ones that I lean on. We have some slightly different organizational values for GGS. Those values are making a difference, inclusion, community, which is related to collaboration, education, and autonomy. And so we did a values exercise for GGS as well as an organization. It's no surprise that my top value of making a difference is, you know, top value at GGS as well. But when you take the time to figure out what your values are, they are such a powerful lens through which you can make difficult decisions. And so when you find your values, you not only kind of narrow them down, right, to a top couple of values, but then you pit them against each other, right? So if I had to make a decision between making a difference and like if I had to sacrifice 1-2% of my integrity, right? I'm not going to sacrifice a massive portion of my integrity. Integrity is my number two. But if I had to sacrifice my integrity just a little bit, like if I have to make a marketing video that's just a little bit cheesy, right? Because I think it's going to help more people raise awareness about our certifications and the way that they can change their lives and women's lives. Like I'm willing to do that because to me, making a difference matters just a bit more, right? And so you literally rank them because there are times when you have to say, is it this or is it that, right? If you have, you know, family and adventure and, you know, autonomy or whatever in your list, like you have to figure out, is family more important than adventure? Because there's going to be times that you're going to have to make a decision. Like, am I going to go on this adventure if it's a big sacrifice to my family? Like which one comes first, right? So you find your values, you rank them, and then you reality test them. And you say, like, is this a fantasy, right? That this is my top value. Mm-hmm. Like for me, having to remove family from my top three values was so wildly painful because I did not want to think of myself as someone who didn't have family in her top values. And when I looked at the reality of my life, I have sacrificed a lot of time with my family in order to make a difference in my organization and in the world. So I had to be honest with myself and family made my top five, but I had to remove it from my top three because I had to say like, I have routinely sacrificed time and experiences with my family in order to make a difference. And so you reality test it and say like, is this true about me? And once you do that, it enables you to make so many difficult decisions in your life and in your business. So every day I'm hit with decisions about, you know, how we're going to prioritize our time and, you know, our resources and things like that. I recently had a huge brand approach me and want me to come, a huge sportswear brand approach me and want me to come and do some education and things like that with their trainers within their organization. And I mean, this is the kind of opportunity that would make most people's like whole world, right? And I had to say, okay, if I'm going to be there, if I'm going to take 2 or 3 days out of my week to go to this place and do this thing and talk to this very small group of people, when I could spend those 2 to 3 days investing in my own enormous community, doing work that's going to help, you know, get our certifications in the hands of more health and fitness professionals who can then turn around and help more women, like am I going to make this choice, right? Which one of these is going to make a bigger difference? And so it's, you constantly have to make hard decisions and choose to do the thing that's aligned with your values, which is the thing that's going to keep you on course and keep you feeling good about the decisions that you make. I think ultimately for me, making decisions, it makes decisions a bit easier and it gives me more peace with the decisions that I make because they're aligned with what's most important to me and personally what it means to live my life well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for walking through all of that. You know, I think it's easy to forget some of those components, even for myself, because I'll think a lot about my values, but then it's true. You can't live all five or all three, even at the same time, all the time, always. And there are going to be really tough decisions that really test those.
Yeah, absolutely. And before, if you're not clear on your values, you're kind of floundering around saying like, I'm not sure what to do. I don't know what the right thing to do is. But when you can run your decisions through that kind of lens or like the litmus test of like, does this align with my top values? It makes things, you know, makes your decisions more clear and gives you, like I said, a sense of peace about them because there are so many decisions to make every single day in our personal lives and also as a business owner and a leader trying to run an organization and, you know, run a community. And so to be able to have that kind of test, because that's the other thing is I get a lot of criticism about decisions that I've made. People, you know, in and outside of the GGS community, they see their piece of the GGS community from their perspective. They're like, well, you should be doing this. And I can't believe you did that. Right. And so to be able to know like, hey, that's totally cool. You know, it sounds like your top value is maybe speaking up or your top value is inclusion or your top value is this or that or whatever the thing is. Like my top value is to make a difference. And so, you know, with all of the knowledge that I have about the ways that we can do that within GGS, I had to make this decision based on that. So like totally get that it doesn't align with you and your values. If it's enough for you to not be part of the community, sad to see you go, happy to have you back whenever, you know, that's right for you or whatever. But like, you just have this just different sense of steadfastness in the choices that you're making that they become a lot less, I was going to say you become a little bit more unshakable in your decision-making, which feels so good when you have so many decisions to make and so many people with opinions about the decisions that you're making.
Right. Yeah. Do you have any added thoughts or comments for people who are specifically concerned about that, concerned about, I don't know, not pleasing all of the people all the time, or concerned about, you know, making a mistake or a faux pas or getting negative criticism, that kind of thing? Do you have any other comments on that?
Yeah. So you're going to get like the thing when you're worried about getting criticism or you're worried people aren't going to like your decisions, you're worried they're going to judge you. The great news is they're already judging you. They're already judging your decisions. They already think that you should be doing things differently. No, it's going to happen. And so it's almost like removing the fear of the unknown. It's almost like the unknown, like what if this is going to happen? It's almost like that's worse, you know what I mean? Than to just be like, oh, this is going to happen. Okay, cool. So like, I know what to expect now, right? And so same kind of thing. If you're clear on your values, if you know why you're making the decision, if you, if the decisions that you're making are aligned with your values, you just have a different level of peace. So I think expecting that it's going to happen, expecting that you're not going to be able to please everyone, expecting that not everyone's going to understand, expecting that you might get some backlash, is really valuable. And it kind of adjacent to that reminds me of the quote that actually is in my book that my dad told me many years ago. He said, baby, it's not what they call you. It's what you answer to that counts. Right. And it's like, that is just such a beautiful way of saying like, they can say whatever they want about you. You know what I mean? But it's like, you know, you better than anybody else. And so if you can feel really good and steadfast in your choices and decisions, it doesn't matter what other people say. And so that would be my piece of advice would be to get clear on your values, you know, reality test them, rank them, know what they are, make decisions that are aligned with them, and understand that you're going to get backlash And then it's your job to, you know, keep your eyes on your own paper and know that like you have work to do in the world. And if it's aligned with your values, then it doesn't really matter what other people have to say.
That's brilliant. It's a great place to leave it there. Well, Molly, thank you so much. This has been excellent. I love chatting with you as always. Thank you so much for joining me for this today.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for the cool work that we've done together and all of the ways that you have made me a better human and a better writer and a better creator. For anyone listening to this, hire Cam. She's amazing. She will make you better in all the areas of your life and work. I can't say enough good things about you. So thank you for having me. It's such a joy to do a podcast with someone and feel so seen and known by them.
Aw, thanks, Molly. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for listening to the Storytelling with Heart podcast. Want to turn your thoughts into leadership and your ideas into words that make a difference? Find me and discover more free resources at www.camilledeputter.com. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe to my email newsletter where I share stories, free tools, and other storytelling guidance. And never forget, your story matters.